The National Catholic Register is the essential and reliable source of news and views for Catholics. Subscribe today. Go to EWTN.com and click on the link for The Register or call 800-421-3230.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Dan Burke interviews columnist and blogger Jimmy Akin about the recent action taken by, all right, this is a mouthful, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith regarding the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. That's a lot, and we'll get to the bottom of it here on this program. Also, we'll be talking with Tim Drake about the new movie For Greater Glory, a film that talks about the Mexican-Cristero War, a fascinating interview with our good friend Tim Drake. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for The Register. Tim, good talking with you once again, my friend.
Yes, good to be with you, Tom and Dan.
Also, Dan Burke, of course, executive director for The Register.
Tom, it's great to be with you.
We're going to begin with you this time around. You're going to be talking with Jimmy Akin, who has really done his homework on the LCWR. Just this weekend, in fact, just a few hours ago, he's provided a complete transcript of his blog interview with writer Ann Carey, the author of Sisters in Crisis. So really, Jimmy is the perfect person to give us the big picture on all this.
I agree, Tom. Recently, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, or CDF, concluded an investigation of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, known as the LCWR. They're made up of about 1,500 leaders of various women religious congregations around the U.S., and the entity was established, the LCWR was established by the Vatican to increase its ability to serve and work with women religious in the U.S. effectively. However, unfortunately, in recent decades, it seems that the LCWR has been hijacked by dissident religious who are now using the Vatican-initiated entity to oppose the very church that birthed the efforts to serve them in the first place. It's a bit like a child using the generosity of his parents to attack them in response. So Jimmy, as Tom mentioned, is a blogger and a columnist for the National Catholic Register, and has provided a number of great pieces like the one you mentioned. He did an audio interview, which is available via one of his blog posts at ncregister.com with Ann Carey, who's an expert on this topic. And he's written a piece coming up in the upcoming Register and then provided the transcript. So welcome back to Register Radio, Jimmy.
Thank you very much, Dan. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, Jimmy, let's just dive right into this. Several members of the LCWR recently have expressed surprise at how critical the Vatican's assessment was of their situation. Is that expression sincere? Were they not aware of the investigation?
Well, they were certainly aware of the investigation. They had been notified as far back as 2008 by Cardinal Oveda, the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, that the investigation would be undertaken. And they really had even had notification before that, that the Holy See had concerns. But in 2008, Cardinal Oveda told them that the investigation would be happening. And then they had a series of correspondences with the investigators, and they knew it was underway. They didn't know precisely when it was going to be announced, the results would be announced. And the reason for that was that or seems to be that the investigation itself was originally leaked to the press by the LCWR leadership itself. And when they did that, the Holy See decided apparently this time they didn't want the results of the investigation being leaked and framed by, you know, the LCWR as evil Vatican beats up on helpless nuns. So they apparently only told them at the last minute what the results were just before the results were released or in conjunction with the results being released.
Well, Jimmy, I knew some of that, but you added a bit more information and you've confirmed my suspicion that they're really it's disingenuous to act surprised. They knew this was coming. What was the nature of the conclusion from my reading of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith's document? A few words stand out, and those are grave and serious. Is it really all that serious? What did they say in summary?
Well, one of the things that their investigation uncovered. And in fact, one of the things that prompted the investigation is a series of doctrinal problems that are that really challenge the core of the Christian faith. There was a nun, for example, who spoke, or a sister who spoke at one of the LCWR's conferences that was cited by Cardinal Ubeda as saying that some nuns are moving beyond the church or even moving beyond Jesus. And there are elements of radical feminism in some of the group's publications that, according to him, challenge the Trinity and the sacramental structure of the church. And those are obviously very fundamental things. They're quite serious and quite grave.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. It's still a bit baffling to me how you can claim to be Catholic, faithful to the church, and go down the paths that they go down. This is Dan Burke for Register Radio. We're with Jimmy Akin talking about the Vatican's recent investigation into malfeasance on the part of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. Jimmy, I've found the public response from religious belonging to the LCWR to be even more concerning than the document itself. One said that she was faithful to the church, but then went on to redefine the vow of obedience as something she discerned out of the hearts of the people that she serves, maybe Jesus alone, and as distinct from the church itself. And to me, it seems dishonest to redefine words that clearly mean something other than what they do in their historic context, and then to use those knowing that many will not understand the underlying shell game taking place. Is this common with dissenting groups? Have you heard similar reactions out of the LCWR membership?
I haven't seen that reaction, but it doesn't surprise me at all. Obviously, if someone has made a commitment of one kind or another, whether it's a vow of obedience or some kind of other commitment, and one no longer wishes to fulfill it, then a logical strategy for living with yourself is to try to redefine it in some way. So if you have someone who's religious who's taken a vow of obedience and they don't want to obey anymore, then they can redefine what obedience means into something else, such that, you know, if we're all trying to just do good in the world and that's all it means to be under a vow of obedience, well, then everyone's under a vow of obedience and can have that. And at that point, it's meaningless. Same way if you have, a husband or a wife who wants to be unfaithful to their spouse, they may redefine fidelity in some creative way to allow them to have extramarital affairs, and it renders the vow they took meaningless.
Jimmy, that's a very insightful analogy, and I think dead on target. Jimmy, you and I are both converts. When I came to the church, I came because I recognized that the Catholic Church is Christ's church, and that in order to honor him properly, I needed to submit to the authority he established. How do these dissident groups see the relationship between Christ and his church and the authority that the church has from Christ himself?
Well, it depends, I suppose, on what you mean by the church. If you mean it in the sense of the magisterium, then they would view it, many of them, I'm afraid to say, as a positive impediment. They would view it as something that's stuck in the past, that is to pre-Vatican II, and that prevents them from fulfilling what they consider the direction that Jesus would have them go. So they would see it as a positive impediment. If you mean something else by the church, for example, if you mean all Catholics who would happen to agree with them, then they would think it's just rosy, and in fact that the church is oppressed by the evil magisterium and so forth like that.
Well, Jimmy, this leaves me a bit baffled. Why not become Protestants? They can go off and do whatever they want, define it however they want. Why would they stay in the church?
Well, some of them aren't. Or at least they're not continuing as religious, as Catholic religious. One of the things that the Vatican investigation turned up was an organization called the Resource Center for Religious Institutes, and it has run seminars on how to, quote, go non-canonical, close quote, in which they discussed a group in Wisconsin, a group of sisters who were able to renounce their vows and reorganize their effort as an ecumenical project while keeping all the property of their former monastery, and they're billed today. They still build themselves as a, build themselves as a monastery, even though they're not a Catholic one.
Yeah, those are Benedictine sisters in Madison, Wisconsin. Now, don't they also practice some sort of what's supposed to be the Eucharist without a priest?
They have what they bill as a breaking of the bread ceremony, and the archdiocese there has warned the public on its website that these do not fulfill one's Sunday obligation.
Well, it's good to see that the local church is protecting the flock from this kind of deception. This is Dan Burke from Register Radio. We're with Jimmy Akin talking about the Vatican's recent alarming assessment of the status of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. Jimmy, another element that was striking to me in the Vatican's report, it seems they come to the conclusion that there's an organized and purposeful policy of dissent, in the sense that it would be like parents who are trying to be benevolent to their children, raising them in a good way, providing for them, and then their children all getting together and deciding that they could be the better parents, they could run the place better, and then essentially overthrowing their parents and booting them out of the organization. It feels like that. What's going on with this policy of corporate dissent as mentioned in the document?
Well, your analogy is insightful. I think that there is a desire on the part of certain people in the LCWR, and I'm not saying everybody, because there are a lot of people in the LCWR who are there because it's a professional society and they don't share the goals of the dissenters, but a lot of them who are in there, obviously enough of them, do share these goals, that the Holy See was quite concerned and insisted that the LCWR needs to be reformed. And they do, you know, have been pursuing an agenda that would radically redefine what it means to live life as a Catholic and to believe what Catholics believe. And there has been a large amount of dissent from the actual teachings of the Church.
That makes sense to me, Jimmy. Well, it doesn't make sense. What you said makes sense. This whole situation doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. This is Dan Burke with Register Radio. We're with Jimmy Akin talking about the Vatican's recent assessment of the Leadership Conference for Women Religious. Something you said, Jimmy, I think is an important caveat to provide our listeners, and that is that not all members of the LCWR or the organizations they represent, probably a better way to say it, are dissenting. I mean, they represent about 80% of the 57,000 women religious in the U.S. These are just a leadership members who seem to have gone off the rails, but there are a lot of faithful sisters buried in beneath those structures where they're being misrepresented. Isn't that the case, Jimmy?
That is the case. Also, even within the LCWR itself, there are going to be different groups, and some are likely to want to cooperate with the reform. Others are likely to not want to cooperate with it. And so we'll have to see which group ultimately ends up being the stronger and the better placed.
Do I remember right that Sister Joan Chittister recently said that she thinks the thing needs to be dismantled and reconstituted outside of the reach of Vatican leadership? Is that right?
Yes, she said that and suggested that a way to handle it would be to dissolve it and have it continue as an unofficial organization, meaning one operating unrecognized by the Vatican as a canonical entity.
Jimmy, it's Tom Price here. One quick question from me, and that would be, do you see the LCWR as sort of like a microcosm of society or a microcosm of the Church in toto, as you know, because you look at how many millions and millions of people are Catholics, and then a smaller number are the faithful Catholics who are totally in line with the magisterium. So is there kind of a comparison there? Is that valid?
I think there's certainly an analogy that can be drawn there. I don't know that I would say that the LCWR is representative of society as a whole, because society as a whole includes a large majority of people who aren't super committed to a dissident viewpoint, and a lot of, you know, just ordinary people who are just trying to go along and get along and live their lives and be okay. decent people, and they don't really have one of these larger overarching agendas. I think within the LCWR, you have a higher percentage of people who have a large overarching agenda.
Okay.
And so I think there's also a bit of disanalogy there, too.
Okay, very good.
Great, Jimmy. Well, you've done a great job of summarizing this for us, both in your blog and your interview with Ann Carey that people can catch on a podcast from one of your posts, the transcript from that podcast this morning, and then in a article coming up in this next issue of the National Catholic Register. People can find your blog posts on ncregister.com. Jimmy, where else can they read what you write regularly?
Well, the hub for a lot of the activity I do is jimmyakin.com. So that's J-I-M-M-Y-A-K-I-N as in Nancy.com.
Well, Jimmy, you're a real blessing to the church and to me personally and to all of us at EWTN. We're grateful for all the work that you do for the kingdom. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks again, Jimmy.
My pleasure.
When we return, we'll be talking about the new movie, For Greater Glory. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other. In our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Tim Drake and Dan Burke, I'm Tom Price. The Cristero War represents a time of significant religious persecution in Mexico back in the late 1920s. Coming up on June 1st, the movie For Greater Glory will bring this largely unknown story to a wider audience. The film stars Andy Garcia, Eva Longoria, and Peter O'Toole. And our good friend Register senior writer Tim Drake had an opportunity to preview the film and interview the actors, the producer, and the director in Los Angeles this week. You still have a little bit of jet lag there, Tim?
A little bit, yes, Tom.
Hopefully you'll get over that quickly. What can you tell us about this film, For Greater Glory?
Well, first of all, I'll say it's a phenomenal film. It tells the story of the Cristero Rebellion that took place in Mexico in opposition to the anti-clerical and anti-Catholic oppressive government of President Plutarco Elias Calles. This Cristero Rebellion took place between about 1926 and 1929, and it resulted in the deaths of more than 90,000 Mexicans. And it has an all-star cast. Andy Garcia plays one of the leads in the film. Peter O'Toole plays a priest. Eva Longoria is in it. Bruce Greenwood, and it's directed by Dean Wright, and he was responsible for a lot of the special effects in The Lord of the Rings and Chronicles of Narnia. So it's an epic film.
Now, the movie, as I understand it, tells the story of this Cristero War, which really, until this week, I had never heard of. Tell me about the story of this war itself.
Yeah, well, and you're not alone, Tom. You know, what's surprising is that the producer told me that this was not taught in public schools in Mexico, and so 70% of Mexicans don't even know this story. But it's significant because it's a uniquely Catholic story in a Catholic country. It's about religious persecution against the church and a civil war that took place within our own hemisphere within the past century. And so it's something we really should be aware of. And the Mexican government at the time was really trying to eradicate the Catholic Church and, if anything, set up a government sort of sponsored church. And this persecution and the violence that resulted led to the first significant wave of Hispanic immigration to the United States, with some 1 million coming into the U.S. And so I think, you know, given what we are facing in our own country regarding religious freedom, this film comes at a pretty significant time.
As I recall, this was the era of Blessed Miguel Pro. Are there references to Blessed Miguel Pro in the movie?
There's no reference to Blessed Miguel Pro in the film. The film really tells the story. If I had to sort of summarize it, I'd say it's the story of a boy, Blessed Jose Sanchez del Rio, who was a martyr for the faith. He was 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. And then the story of this general, General Enrique Gorostieta, who led kind of this band of peasants and ranchers against the government. So while Miguel Pro is not in the film or spoken of in the film, you have a beautiful example of this young martyr, Blessed Jose Sanchez del Rio.
Is it an easy story to follow? I mean, do you really understand the two forces working against each other? I remember that in reading about the Spanish Civil War, it's a lot more complicated. Is that your thoughts as well?
It is complex. They do a pretty good job, but I'll say, because of my own lack of knowledge of the language of Spanish, watching it twice helped me quite a bit. Watching it the first time, there are a lot of characters who are thrown at you, and so trying to keep them straight and figure out where they are in the story. If there was one, you know, thing I would say that could be better, it would be that. And I think they're actually doing some further editing on the film, so the final version might be a little bit more clear.
You mentioned that you found the film very inspiring. What was it that makes the film inspiring for you?
Yeah, I would say the film is very soul stirring, in particular the story of Blessed Jose Sanchez del Rio, as that character is transformed in the film, and then we see his martyrdom. I could not shake the images from that for several days after after seeing the film the first time. And it's a beautiful portrayal. It's very inspiring, and I think it will remind viewers in many ways of the Passion of the Christ, actually.
Really? And one of my all-time favorite actors, Peter O'Toole, is in this movie. People would remember him from Lawrence of Arabia, My Favorite Year, a very goofy movie. Tell me about the character that Peter O'Toole plays.
Yes, he plays this this older foreign priest who is in Mexico, Father Christopher, and he has some very moving scenes with the young Blessed Jose Sanchez del Rio. Father Christopher is... I'm going to have a spoiler here, but he is martyred early in the film. But his martyrdom really is the seed for what Jose Sanchez del Rio then later does. The two have a beautiful relationship, and their martyrdoms are connected in more ways than one, even in the way that both of them are shot. They're kind of, and I mean shot by the director. He shoots both of those scenes from above. And
really?
It's unique, and I asked the director about that, and he said, well, perhaps that's a God's eye view, which I think, I mean, there's a connection there, too, to the Passion, if you think about the scene of Christ's crucifixion, and pretty remarkable.
I'm always on the lookout whenever any movie portrays the Catholic Church, not necessarily that it's going to be, you know, rosy or terrible, but is it accurate? So that's really what I'm after. Does the film do a good job of portraying the Catholic Church as it really is?
It does. I think this is one of the most Catholic films that I've seen in a long time, and it treats the Church respectfully and reverently, but yet it doesn't shy away from some of the brutality of the story. It's a complex story in which you have folks who are part of the Church doing things, making mistakes. So it doesn't shy away from that aspect of the story. But yet at the same time, it is filled with religious imagery, iconography, crucifixes, statues, and portrayals of people of faith. So I think it does a wonderful job of portraying the Church.
Well, fair enough. I'm looking forward to it. Now, obviously, there's some big A-name actors in this movie, Andy Garcia, Peter O'Toole, Eva Longoria. But that doesn't always mean automatically that a film is going to have wide release. Sometimes it's just going to be a little art house thing. Is this film going to have a big release?
Yeah, according to the producer, Pablo Barroso, when it opens on June 1st, it's going to be on at least 700 screens, which is a pretty sizable release.
Yeah.
You know, not as big as some of the huge blockbusters, but still pretty sizable. And that number, of course, changes up to the moment that the film is released. So
Sure. It
may be on more.
And one more thing before we let you go. You mentioned that this was a press junket, and I've heard this phrase all my life. Tell me what a press junket is.
Well, that's a great question. In fact, it was my first sort of official movie press junket. So what it is basically the studio, I believe, flies out journalists from various entities. In fact, EWTN was well represented. Chris Edwards was there, the producer for Raymond Arroyo's show, Matt Swaim, producer for Brian Patrick's show, was there as well.
Yes.
And basically, we all get a chance to see the film, and then we are given a chance to interview the talent, the actors, the director, the producer of the film, you know, for the purpose of doing reviews on the film and writing stories about it. So that's basically what a press junket is, although, you know, I don't exactly know what that word junket means.
Well, it sounds like you had a good experience and that maybe you'll be going on some more junkets in the future, huh?
Well, God willing.
God willing. That's the only way to look at it. Okay. Again, the movie For Greater Glory, and the release date is June 1st, getting some pretty wide release, so we'll be looking for that. And hopefully Raymond will be talking about the movie on the world over and perhaps some of the other programs here on EWTN. And Tim, thank you so much for summarizing everything for us so well.
Thank you, Tom.
Dan, my friend, always good to see you, and really appreciate all that you did this week with Jimmy Akin.
Always it's an important issue, and we're grateful to have the ability to educate and inform people through the radio.
Indeed. And we're thankful for you, the listener, for joining us this time around on Register Radio. For Tim Drake, Dan Burke, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is made possible by donations from generous listeners like you. To bless us with your gift, visit ncregister.com and click on the Donate tab or call 205-568-9756.